home, we are WNST. AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, we are Baltimore Positive. Positively out here at the Beaumont right now. They got lamb chops on for me right now. Maybe a pork chop. Take home to my wife with that special peach marmalade stuff that they do out here. It's always great out here. Life is great in the 21228. It's all brought to you by our friends at the Maryland Lottery. I have Raven scratch-offs to give away. I have Councilman Pat Young here, who's running for Baltimore County Executive. I will have lamb chops before it's all over with.
Nice.
Like, I know you're proud of everything in Catonsville, Pat, so start with that. But
you're saying all the taglines.
Well, I did my tastiness, brought to you by Curio Wellness and Far and Dotter. It's my 27th anniversary. We have a little 27th logo here. Thank you. August 3rd was our 27th anniversary. So I'm celebrating by eating my 27 favorite things to eat. And obviously, I've known Evan here a number of years. State Fair came on, chicken and waffles. Then Beaumont opens in the middle of the plague, and my wife fell in love with the pork chop over here. Me, it was always the lobster tail, but my wife got mad at me. She's like, the lobster tail, fine, it's good, but the lamb chops here at the Beaumont is what you should get. Now, Stu tells me he didn't eat meat. He said, no, get the fried green tomatoes, get the shrimp and grits. So you got a lot of great dining options out here
in
beautiful Catonsville, right?
You do. And it's only gotten better in the last, I'd say, five, 6 years. And they're not done. You mentioned State Fair, Beaumont, even El Guapo's here. And we have Fadley's coming in right down the
street. I know all about that. Damie's been trying to get that frontage up, so.
That's not to get right into it, but watching them kind of go through these challenges just with a building that's older and realizing that when they try to put a roof on, they were informed of what was going on with the roof that they had to take care of. It's
Damie's told
me
the story in the air.
I didn't want to.
Faith this a couple weeks ago. Sure, yeah. Yeah, they're great friends of mine.
But totally committed to being here, and we're looking forward to them opening up.
Yeah, when? I keep asking when?
Did they tell you what did they say when?
Soon.
Soon.
Damn it, soon. I'll be back at Faithly sometime soon. You get some order some crab cakes from Damie. She'll be glad to help you. All right, so you been a councilman here, and I go through military background and Trump and just all the nonsense, the armory, all the things going on here.
Sure.
But you're making a move, and I've had Julian on, I've had Izzy on, I've had Nick on. You're the last person had on, but I chased you down in Mako. You can't, you wound up in the window here in 21228. Just on a policy level and where we are with Johnny O moving on. I've had Johnny O on up at Casa Cincinnati a couple months ago. I had him on before I had any of you on.
Nice.
Just the fact that we're trying to move the county forward. I'm a county resident. I own a business here.
Sure.
Care a lot about the county. And I wanted to talk to all of you because I'm going to have a vote in all of this. If not an endorsement, but a vote. For sure, I think it's important that everybody knows you guys, all of you.
Agreed.
And gals.
Well, appreciate you opening up the platform. But yeah, and I'm actually surprised I didn't have your number from the last time you had me on back during the council race. So that was my fault.
This is where I sing the Millie, baby, don't you lose my number. But look, we're all in this together.
Right,
I eventually got you out of here. You've been busy as a councilman, though. I know that. And, I had Todd on before he had his problems. I had David Marks on a couple weeks ago. I try to have all of you on because it's Baltimore Positive. I'll talk Ravens and Orioles and all that. But there's nothing more important. I think we learned this during COVID.
Right.
Than our communities and what's going on and who our leadership is.
Oh, I appreciate you doing that too because there aren't as many platforms for folks to kind of get out what's happening locally, right? We used to have a local paper. Even if you consider the Catonsville Times, there used to be an Arbutus Times. That doesn't really exist anymore.
I'm an old Dundalk Eagle guy.
Right. That was going on. I think it's still around, but through
think about Ted Venatoulis running the Towson Times for all the years.
For all those years before, And now we just don't have as many options to kind of get out there. Being able to open up your platform to any of us, it's a great opportunity to kind of reach other folks that we otherwise wouldn't have access to.
Well, I feel like that's, even if Trump comes and takes my FCC license, this is my, not just a calling, but I think it's my duty. And I think I've looked through my years with Orioles and Ravens, and even the Colts coming back this week, 1975 Colts. It's just the most important thing we can do is take care of business, take care of our schools, our people.
Yeah.
We're all in this together, whether we want to be or not. Black or
That's
white,
true.
Right or left, east or west, Dundalk or Catonsville, And I think the county, the thing I've learned from my relationship with Don Moeller and Jim Smith before that, had Kevin Kamenetz's boy Carson on. He's running for office.
That's right.
Running for one of your gigs. The thing I've learned about this is our county is an amazing county across all the counties in the country.
Right.
Top 100 county, population, money, businesses here.
Right.
I got Social Security employees at the counter up here. Just, it's an important county for water, for land, for, you know, the purpleness of our state and the size of the county being a primary county in the state. So this is a big step for you,
well,
right?
It absolutely is. And, you know, they talk about Maryland being American miniature. I mean, Baltimore County also is a form of America in miniature. We have water, we have rural, we have urban space.
Heavy red places on the east side, yes.
And when you say purple, too, I mean, when it comes to elections nationwide or even for the whole county, the entire state, the which way Baltimore County goes, generally, that's the way the entire state goes. So Wes Moore won it when he won the primary. Larry Hogan won it, Baltimore County, when he won the first time around, too. So it really is a good microcosm of how the entire state thinks and the mentality here.
I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that winning a Democratic primary in Baltimore County is an automatic ticket to being the county executive. And you know, I've talked to Al Redmer at length about that when he was running. He's a friend of mine, a sane Republican. I like everyone. All three of you I know. I love all of you. but I had, you know, I had Al on back when he was running as well. I don't think it's automatic, and I think hearing your message, I heard Nick first, and I think Julian, Izzy, you. What is your message to Baltimore County at this point? Because, I mean, you've had your hands in the sticky sauce of picking the current county executive. Right,
right. Yeah, no, and also representing this, growing up here, but also representing this county in the Maryland General Assembly for 8 years, chaired the Baltimore County delegation for 4 of those years before coming on the council, really getting an idea and recognizing the impact that the state decisions have on our local policy. Especially in this last budget season. I mean, I think that you're asking about in terms of a message and what I've seen. Growing up here and seeing how different neighborhoods evolve, different economic corridors have, you know, which ones have struggled and which ones have been fruitful or
we're
done
sitting
very
in Kate's
well.
Or
we're sitting here right now.
If every municipality in Baltimore County, if every Reisterstown, I don't want to forget any, Reisterstown, Randallstown, Arbutus, Woodlawn, just go all the way around. If every locker room, every Dundalk.
Yeah.
If I wish Dundalk had this vibrancy, right? And Towson's been struggling. Nancy Afford and I have been at it, you know, online and trying to lift Towson. And Towson's so important. You would agree with that.
Absolutely.
Running for county. But Catonsville is a little bit of and you being over here, you can
I'm biased
say
too, right?
And you're biased, right? And I spent enough time over here. I would tell Don Moeller for years I didn't understand the West Side versus the East Side.
Right.
I didn't spend enough time over here in that way, and certainly not living here and knowing a lot of people over here, but I have over the last 20 years. How do we get more Catonsvilles? And that sounds like Moeller now, but
no,
yes.
And you bring up a good point, too. I mean, there's always these ebbs and flows, right? I know Towson's having some economic issues that they're trying to address. That's somehow tied and partly tied to some of the federal decisions that have been made, but also from COVID and trying to figure out what the new normal
empty storefront's a weird thing, right?
And folks getting back to work, some businesses mandating it, other ones still having like flexibility for workers so they can work from home, which takes an impact on downtowns like Towson and sometimes for Catonsville. I'd say that what makes us unique is not only do we have businesses here and folks that are working here professionally, but it's also supported by the surrounding neighborhood that's always made downtown Catonsville great. And over time, even when I was here, so I was recruited.
It's a little bit like a Friends episode, Catonsville, right? I mean, it is, right?
It is. Everybody seems to know who
they are.
I
walk in here, Stu comes in, sits at the counter. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I walked in here, Jack Antwerp was here. He said yes to me on the way.
He said yes on the way.
He said yes on the way. He stopped me on the way. I know Jack on the way. But, I mean, my competitors were here hosting a client, like, literally.
Oh, wow. When you,
Clear Channel was here hosting a client. So, like, I walked in. I don't just know Paulie behind the bar or Tatra or people that run the place, but like there have been 7 patrons, humans in here, not you, not invited guests, 7 different humans that have been in here since I walked in here at 12:15 that I know in the, and this is a small restaurant.
It is.
So,
yeah.
I mean, I would just say that the humanity of Catonsville and getting people out and the vibrancy of Yomps being open, State Fair, you know, all of these places bring people out, and they know they're going to see people they know.
And
that's community. That is community.
It is, and from my experience, too, going around the entire county, when you mentioned Dundalk, too, they have, in their own main street, it's its own vibe, right? And you run into folks from that side of town that I don't necessarily know.
I go into Squires or Costas. I don't. Right. Everybody's my friend. You would know a lot of people, right?
Right.
Because you're not from that side of town, right?
Right. And sitting down, and going to Squires, going to some of the other restaurants on that side of town, and sitting down with folks just for a meeting. They run into folks they know, and it feels the feel is very similar. And I say that to say that there's everyone has their own affinity, right? Like you go to Arbutus, and there's the spot you go to down there. There's Catonsville, and then you also have Reisterstown Road all the way around this entire county from one end to the other. And folks don't recognize that if they're not from there, but that vibe of where they're from, where they've grown up, where they've decided
to go to.
that's absolutely. I thought you were asking for his name. I was about to tell you. But no, that
I went to Dundalk, you know. So.
Right, right. And, you know, St. Joe on my side, just a shout out on that. But
I won't hold it against you.
That's all right. Same. But that idea of what makes a neighborhood great, what makes a community great, and even a main street, and focusing our resources as a county, as a government, on who's doing well and who needs help, and following the lead of our key organizations that are operating in those areas. So we have the Catonsville Chamber of Commerce. There's the Towson Chamber of Commerce. Other organizations that care about what's going on in the area. Just recently, you had mentioned the Armory. There's a group of citizens that started the Friends of the Catonsville Armory that are actively now engaging with me, engaging with the County Executive's Office and the state about what happens next. Folks that are already putting time in that you don't know about unless you go in and put roots down, but also put your feet down on the ground and engage with the neighborhood about who are the key players, who's keeping this place alive, and if we want to provide more resources, who do we go to try and do that as a government?
Well, as a governor, as an elected for a number of years here in different ways, I mean, you've walked in, asked for a handshake, asked for a vote, asked for money, asked for support, asked for an ear, just listen to me, you know, just hear me out, hear my idea, hang a sign up, you know. Doing all of that, what at this point makes you want to run for county executive? Why is this the right lane for you right now?
Right. So thanks for asking, too. I think being on the council for 2.5 years, the experience that I had in the Maryland General Assembly and having a vision for where we move forward as a county together and as a government, I think that my experiences living here also are exactly the same experiences that folks that have been trying to deal with county government, whether they're a business or just an individual, whether they're working with code enforcement, whether they're working with permits, there's a mentality that if you engage with Baltimore County government, that you're not treated as a partner. It's more often than not, it's felt like you're an adversary to try and get a situation fixed or solving a problem.
I've had an issue with that recent times, yes.
And that's sort of what I've gotten. Even before,
I feel like I should have solved it when Johnny was running the county. I went to sleep on that, maybe.
Well, I would say that from, and I mentioned this to Johnny too, I think he recognized from being around that this isn't new. I mean, this is a feeling that I've had even before getting involved in local government.
Getting things done,
but also trying to be a partner, right? And approaching an office or approaching the folks that you identify as the decision makers to solve something as a partner, but being treated as a speed bump or something.
Well, if you're helping me make my business better, you're fundamentally helping make the county better.
Absolutely.
I mean, I don't know what else there is to say.
Right.
If you make parking better at the Beaumont, you make the Beaumont better. If you make, literally, the traffic lights work, the water runs, the pothole not in front of the hat, that there's not loitering, that it's safe to be here, that like just all of that quality of life feeds into business being able to employ people and be sustainable.
And while in just had this conversation the other day with a business in Baltimore County, we are full of programs and full of folks that are willing to provide a layer of assistance. There might be a grant available. There might be funding available through a loan. But after you're told about it and there isn't a follow-up, it's like, here you go. Good luck to you.
Fill out the form.
And then you may not get it. And then trying to follow back up. There's intent and want to be helpful, but then the next step needs to be there to then get folks to the end of the line to actually be an assistant, be a value added to folks that live here. And I feel like that's missing and has been missing from Baltimore County government for a while. There seems to be the perception is if you know somebody or the right person, then you can move something. But if you don't, you get stuck in the mud. And I want to end that, and I want to fix it.
All right, so Councilman Pat Young's here. We're over in beautiful Catonsville. We're in the 21228. We are at the Beaumont. If you hear glasses clinging, it's Larry Stewart and all of his buddies up with Paulie having a delicious lunch here. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery, Raven Scratch-Offs giveaway. I thought I was going to eat lamb chops here today. I thought I was going to get the lottery. I haven't eaten anything.
Keep talking about lamb chops.
I barely got water here. Let me get a bowl of soup or something. I want to ask you about the state of the county and when Johnny left. And I've asked man to man. I haven't talked to Crandall. Mm-hmm. I talked to David Marks on and off the air about this. He joined me at Pete's John's. Right. I guess I'm going around a county or tell. I'm trying to think of the people that I want to talk to. But the notion that you're going to select a county executive that wasn't one of you, mm-hmm. that wouldn't be offensive to anybody, it's 4-3, Democrat and Republican, and where the numbers are, and whether it would be a Republican or a Democrat, what would be make it palatable. And then the inevitable fight about the Inspector General situation, mm-hmm. and how they're 1 and 1A. And what you were trying to accomplish when, I mean, I had Barry Williams on my show up at the Y,
right.
and then I sat with the current county executive, not on the air, but off the air, and I thought to myself, did you guys make a good decision? I'm wondering that as a citizen as to whether I would vote for her, or whether I would have her on my show, or whether there's a level of, I don't want to be disrespectful and say competency, mm-hmm. but just awareness or the ability to be more than a placeholder that all of you can then run against or not run.
Right.
But I am a little concerned as a resident and as a citizen as that how the whole process, because I thought the process was kind of corny.
Sure.
And I might have thought that when Don Mohler was selected, but that was a different circumstance where there had been a tragedy,
yeah, right.
and it was quick and it was down and dirty and it was 5 months and it was Don and he was basically you took a high school principal and an educator and said, we're going to put you in that spot. And Don didn't want to rock the boat. He said a million times that I didn't want to make a lot of decisions because I wasn't elected.
Right, right.
I just found all of this to be a little bit strange and a little bit different. That's all.
Yeah.
From one radio guy to another. Yes.
No, and I
that's eight, by the way. John
say,
Patty, WBAL. I've had Clear Channel's already been here today. We bring BAL in too. It's fine. Hi. He's on the radio. Yeah. Anyway, yeah.
No, I was mentioning that the charter wasn't.
I love giving BAL trouble from the front of here at the Beaumont.
Wherever right? you can, right?
Yeah.
No, but the charter stated what to do in the case of a vacancy, and obviously that was the first time I think that was actually done was with Don Mohler when they appointed him. I don't think it had been utilized before that, and now.
Well, it's such a strange circumstance
it
if
was,
someone
right.
passes away
Absolutely.
Or resigns or physically can't do the job or whatever.
And knowing
it was
such a short period of time as well, and that there was someone that had been involved in the administration and county government for decades, it made a lot of sense. On our side,
it seemed a lot easier when Don was selected.
It did.
It didn't seem controversial.
Right.
In any way.
And because there was so much time between a rumor of Johnny running for Congress. And assuming he would win. And so there was time in between for folks to kind of
line up,
and sort of some decided to try and put some, for lack of a better word, campaign toward it, right? Because even though you weren't really campaigning, it was about trying to engage with the folks that the citizenry, but also the county council members that made the decision. And I think everybody, to some extent, played a role in that. I mean, even Kathy had reached out to and had a relationship with everyone on the council. I knew her from serving in the legislature for 8 years, knowing her as a senator and as a competent leader in the Senate. And what I've experienced now, and I'll say this too from someone that came from the legislature to county government, it is
a different job.
It is a different job and a different approach. What I've seen too, and even having a conversation with her was. The thing that I experienced, too, was that there's a different tempo and a different style to legislating at the state level. And that makes sense because it's 90 days. Once the clock starts ticking, you have 90 days to get your work done, and then it's done. Here, it's all year round. And not only that, but if you're the executive, it's all looking at you. So you can't...
Well, if there's a murder in Woodlawn, it's a different job than being a legislator.
Absolutely, yeah. And I would say...
And Johnny was so good at managing things. There's so many people disappointed. I told Johnny, but disappointed that you're doing this because you were good at that.
Exactly.
And that's a different job.
Right. And it is. And interesting enough, I'm sure... Have you had Johnny on since he's been...
I have, yes.
Yeah, I'm sure just that culture shock of coming from being the executive to now being in the...
He said that everybody hates everybody down there. Nobody works together. You know, it's like that's different than
local.
I have a police chief, and we're all working toward the same goal, which is the safety and the advancement of our community.
What
down there, you're working for fighting against each other with bills, and it's a different. It's a different.
And
different
you have
job.
A national platform where there's a I would imagine a pressure to fight.
Well, you do listen. Johnny did an hour and a half with me. You can talk about it, but I mean, down there, it's a lot of Trumpy and a lot of you know Marjorie Taylor. You know, you're in that space to try to get oxygen. Here, there's a fire, there's a murder, there's a school, there's a shooting, there's a thing, there's a trauma, there's a war, there's a local group that needs.
Yep.
There's Fadley's trying to get a
Yep, trying to get a building standard to open a business in Baltimore.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And to that exact point, too, we are working together. And it is about collaboration at this point. So when it came down to trying to decide on who the next county executive would be, and looking at the charter, which didn't give a whole lot of guidance on what to do, so we chose to try and provide as much opportunity for the public to kind of participate in that process. We knew collectively that we wanted somebody that could get 7 votes. We wanted somebody that could pass muster with every single member of the council, because at the end of the day, it would be the county executive working with the county council and the county council working with the county executive.
And so I also think 4-3, Republican, Democrat, East, West, y'all don't agree.
Not all the time. You're not all best friends.
Yeah. Literally, right?
Yeah, there's more things that we pass that's unanimous and that we work together on than we disagree on. But when we disagree, it's for legitimate reasons, and that's the purpose of the discourse, and that's the purpose of being in these positions too, to fight for your community and also present what you believe to be the best impression of what your constituents want from your district.
Well, it's different for you being a military guy too, right? Because you took orders there, right? Literally, to some degree, right?
I've absolutely been in the military, taking some orders, but also rising to the point where I was able to also give a few,
and
lead folks, especially in second tour in Iraq. I was in a leadership position, but not the first time.
There's a role for both, though.
Right. And collaborate. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's a different kind of fight in the legislature,
of course,
state and local, than it is in the military and the Marine Corps. But the collaboration piece of being on a team, I think, is the mindset that I try to bring as much as I can. So when we work together, we work together. And when it's time to present, aggressively my opinion and my position on something, it's time to do that. So there's time to collaborate, and there's time to also push back and fight for something.
Yeah, absolutely. Pat Young's here, councilman. We're in Catonsville. All right, so you're running for county executive. What's why? Well, give me your campaign thing, and then we're gonna get to the armory. I want to talk about that.
I'd be happy to talk. Yeah. So and if you allow me a story,
storytelling.
I'll tell a story then. So
we got a lamb chop, so I know you got storytelling.
Well, so when I going back all the way back, I can. Growing up in Catonsville, growing up in this area, and why do I do what I do, and what's an inflection point in terms of what the decisions that I've made over the last 42 years have been. I remember I was maybe around 10 or 12 years old. I got into a serious fight with a good friend of mine, and we're still friends now, but it came to blows. You could tell we got into a fight. I don't even remember what the argument or what the fight was about, but I do remember I had to go home, and my mother told me I had to talk to my father. I had to let him know what had happened. And my father worked for the NSA for 35 years. And he wasn't a secret agent, at least he said he wasn't, but that made him suspect in the first place. But if you wanted to talk to Dad, as soon as he came home, he went right to his easy chair, and the legs came up, and you had to talk to him. He was an affectionate man. I knew he loved me, but that was just sort of his way. He worked, he came home, went to his chair. So I had to stand there and tell him what happened. And I'm going through this whole story and trying to make excuses and trying to put blame on somebody else. And he's listening to me, and I can tell he's intent. And I stop, and there is a pause. And he puts the legs of his chair down. I'm like, that's not a good sign. And he stands up, and he puts his hands on my shoulders. And he says, Pat, if you're going to get into a fight, you damn well better be defending somebody else. And I don't think he didn't know he was creating a moment. It wasn't manufactured. He was concerned, and he didn't want me to, one, fight with a friend, but also just getting into an altercation. But in that moment, it was a recognition of it's okay to break a rule. It's okay to cross a line if it's for somebody else, if it's defending somebody else. It's not for yourself, not for selfish reasons. It's at the end of the day, the purpose is to assist someone. And that doesn't mean it has to be physical. If you're getting into an argument, if you're getting into a fight, if you're going to fight for something physically, mentally, academically, it should be for something else, something bigger than you. And I tell that story just to say that in terms of why am I doing this and why did I do any of this? Why did I join the Marine Corps? It was this idea, this concept of something bigger than me. I went through the Boy Scouts, became an Eagle Scout for this concept of giving back and learning how to give back the best way that I can. And then coming out and losing that sense of mission from the military, that a lot of veterans coming back have that sense of a lost mission, a lost purpose, and putting that time and effort into helping other vets and then leading to running for office.
Well, you were in the military. You weren't thinking about running for councilman, were you?
No.
Right, you're right, yeah.
Honestly, my father having 35 years in the federal government, I thought I was going to work. There was a point where I thought I'd do 20 years in the military after my second
tour. But you would have a government job.
Right, that was
your track. Yeah, okay.
So it wasn't an intent, but the
Your track wasn't putting signs up with your name to run for county executive.
No, it was not.
Okay.
Ending up here, honestly, if you talked to me from 11 years ago, even then, it would have been like, are you crazy? I don't think that – I wouldn't have seen myself in these positions 15 years ago. But I'm glad that I have been. I mean, being able to engage with the neighborhood that I grew up in, the community that I grew up in, the county that I've called home my entire life has been a blessing and also just an experience that I would never change for anything. Every now and then you think, what would happen if I stayed in the military? But, you know, the impact would have not been nearly as much as it's been here, trying to help other veterans, help family members, help folks from just around this neighborhood, try and solve problems. And at the end of the day, how can I use my talents and what I've learned to impact the most amount of people in a positive way? How can we utilize government to emulate what I believe it to be, which is a problem solver and a place that people can go to solve their issues when they've run into a wall or they can't solve them themselves? That's what, in the very basic, we're supposed to be providing as a government, as a council person, as an elected official.
Looking out for people, making
lives better. And that, I could go in, I could, you asked the question, Nestor, and I could go into policy positions as well. I mean, we talked about Catonsville, and I think about these economic corridors that either have historic main streets or historic economic corridors. I think about Security Boulevard. I think about Route 40. I think about the Trade Point Atlanta.
Sure.
Even right now, 11 years ago in 2014 when I got elected, I grew up going to Security Square Mall. 13 years old was when I was allowed to walk there myself, and I spent more time there at that movie theater than I probably should have. But that was my stomping ground, and then watching over time as it deteriorated, then finding out, especially getting in the government, how that happened over time, and then one mall isn't the same experience from another mall. But then, how
and then
are we
going to? And what it means to the community, what it means outside of the mall.
Absolutely.
Right. I'm from East Point Mall guy, right?
Right.
Golden Ring's gone, but it's been repurposed, right? So those things in the county.
And now, from that, now 11 years later, what even then thinking, how could we fix this? And even talking with my colleague, Senator Sidnor, what can we do? And then finding out through working with county government, working with the state government, to now that the county now the county owns a third of that property, a little bit more than a third of that property, to start the first public-private partnership to develop an area that is the size of Annapolis. The size of old Annapolis is, you can overlay the map over top of the Security Square Mall property. That is a generational-changing opportunity for an area, for a county, for a community. And we're so close because we've been able to leverage support and dollars from the federal government, the state government, and from local government to do something that it's never traditionally been involved with. Development has consistently been about somebody that might own a piece of property. Is it zoned appropriately? If not, go through the zoning process. If you meet all these other requirements related to planning and permits, go ahead and build what you want. But this has to be intentful. This has to be public.
Well, I talked to Nick Stewart, who's also running for this gig, over about White Marsh, and we did it staring at White Marsh,
right.
Red Brick Station. Yeah. And, you know, I had Bill Blocker on, who owns Red Brick Station, and I've known Billy 30 years. I remember when the Avenue was a concept, and I thought, who the hell would go there? I'll go to the mall.
Right.
Who's going to go outside and shop? You know, who's going to do that? Who's going to shop online ever?
Right.
So now that's come along, right? And that White Marsh Mall area sitting there in the same, housing where the Sears was, and walking space and an indoor sort of this and that. And I'm thinking, well, that ain't a mall, but we don't need a mall.
We have
space for a mall. We dug it up in 1981 and made it a mall.
Right.
What do we do with it now? Same thing over here. That's your east side. And Towson, the same thing. We built a mall. Maybe, you know, that's not exactly what it needs to be anymore.
Yeah.
And all this extra space. All of this would be under the purview of County Executive Young, right?
Like, literally. Absolutely. And a choice to take an active role in trying to figure. We mentioned East Point Mall and driving on that side. I see what could be, and I see where Security Square Mall was even 10 years ago, where there was really no plan. There was no attempt to even try and find one.
But it's space that was set out 50 absolutely. Years ago next to freeways,
right.
with access, egress, ingress. Like, all of that was sort of played out from it just being there. I mean,
right.
and places like White Marsh and even Columbia and Howard, they're planned. They were planned for many,
right.
many years. I mean, White Marsh was a marsh.
It sure was.
It was a middle of nothing, right. and it became its own city. My kid went to Perry Hall because right. White Marsh existed.
That's right.
Because the mall came 20 years later. My kid had a high school to go to and
right.
and trailers out in the back.
That's sure, sure.
Right.
Yeah,
well, that's another thing about how much is too much
right.
for population, because we have a nice population base, right?
Right, absolutely.
Huge
and
population
base. And I would say this, you know, there's in the 2020 census and over time of evaluation, it said that we sort of lost population. I think that numbers have been skewed because of COVID when we were trying to conduct a census. I think the 2030 census is going to put us in the right direction in terms of growth.
Well, the high schools would tell you we're not
exactly
we're,
right.
We're getting less people, right? We get more babies.
So, and I think that's also why it was such a, from a standpoint of being an elected official, seeing those numbers come back and being disappointed, because losing population is also recognition of losing dollars from the federal and state. Where is their investment? Where is there an argument for more dollars to come in? So, I think that the 2030 census really recognizing the true population of Baltimore County and how we've grown and how we've also consistently, you know, changed over time is going to be key to the next 10 years. One of what we can do, but also what we where we should be focusing our efforts and where we should be focusing our resources.
What's the biggest issue in the county? I mean, as you see, I mean, you're right. sitting here, one of the seven people helping run it. I mean, what's say budget? What would you say? Money?
Yeah.
It's always money, right? It's,
well, always money, so it wouldn't be fair. Wouldn't be fair to just say
that's
budget,
easy,
but
easy.
Like I think, but folks are feeling it now. I think from a standpoint of like what are issues that other people are feeling. It's like even any family is feeling the pinch when they go to the grocery store, when they go to the pump. Folks don't have as much flexible or disposable income as they used to, and they're feeling it. And most folks, I mean, I think there was a study saying that most families don't have savings enough to cover even 2 weeks or 3 weeks worth of job loss. Like, not it's forget paycheck.
I saw credit card debt being like outrageous in the country right now, like all time crazy high. And I heard that 15 years ago, but I'm thinking leverage is tough,
right?
And for anybody,
and these aren't things that the county necessarily can change, but it's something that we have to deal with. How do we make people's lives easier when it comes to what we can do, knowing that folks are already feeling it when it comes to what they have available to them in terms of resources to make their lives easier? What we can do to leverage with the state when it comes to our public transit system, giving people more options so that the working where they want to work and living where they want to work, living where they want to work and working where they want to can be more affordable so they can make a conscious choice, not a forced choice. Even when it comes to seniors, too, allowing folks to age in place where they want to, but having the resources available to make sure that they're safe in the place that they've called home their entire lives.
The thing I've heard from several of you, including Carson Kamenetz, who was very astute about all this stuff, and Nick Stewart, I think, brought it up, too, is just the aging population
right.
of our county. And I guess I'm one of them. You know, I went to elementary school here.
Yep.
I went to middle school, went to high school, went to community college, had a business here for 30 years. I lived in the city for 19, but I'm back in the county voting again. And I, you don't know whether I'll die here or not, but I'd like to think that, like, whatever the AT Center is or whatever they're doing mm-hmm. at the Bicota over there
sure.
would be able to have enough space to have people like me. And
right.
as we get older, to age gracefully and easily, and transportation and ease of service and
right.
all those kinds of things that you'd want to have for quality of life as we get older. But
right.
I did not realize we were an aging county.
Oh, yeah, right. And
a lot of people don't leave here. We don't move to Florida more for Baltimore County to some degree.
Right,
we stay
yeah.
in Parkville.
That's true. And I think the aging population that we've recognized and engaged with, too, is that they're not everyone wants to necessarily downsize. They've had a home that they've raised a family in.
I couldn't make my mother leave her house at the end of
right?
her life. She
and
just wouldn't leave.
I you know,
that would have killed her.
I also faced this issue back before the pandemic, 2019. My mother had died, and then my father had had a massive stroke, and they were living in the same home that I had grown up in. We had to make a decision for my father. And my sister, who's a nurse, had medical power of attorney. It wasn't safe to bring him back to the house. I was able to leverage my own resources, but I'm lucky because I had served on the Health and Social Services Subcommittee. I knew folks in county government and the Department of Aging to kind of help answer questions related to, if we wanted to bring him home, how much would that cost? And what would it, in the sense of what would it take to make the house safe? And one person came in saying, like, honestly, on a three-story, it was a two-story house with a basement, I'm not sure if it is safe for somebody with memory care issues.
Sure.
And needing to make the decision for him to then find a place nearby. And then he made it back to the house once or twice, but never in the way that he wanted to. But also he wasn't completely in control of, one, his memory, or two, his faculties to then leave him alone. You had to, it almost like I had to bring him to his own home as like a visit to then take him back to where
he's
going to
take care of
him.
Aging's tough, man, for all of us. Right. I mean, you know, and anybody that's experienced it,
right,
you're going to have to reach the government for help in some way.
Absolutely.
Government and hospital will be a part of your journey.
That's true.
And if it hasn't, and you need help,
right,
because nobody's navigated it before. I never had a 98-year-old mother before,
right,
until I had one.
And folks don't think about it or realize it until they're faced with it and they
the
have to
do. How do I do?
It,
who
right?
do I call?
Yeah.
Where do
and,
I go?
And we're lucky to have a Department of Aging that does have resources, but if folks aren't thinking about it or they've never engaged with them before, that's part of the job that I do like. And as a council person, as an elected official, but also as the county executive, being able to connect people easier to the things that they pay their taxes for. You pay your taxes not just to have smooth roads, not only to have sewer and water, not only these services, but it's also we provide certain support that you should have an expectation of being able to access when the time comes, especially when it comes to aging population.
What is when somebody that cares when you pick up the phone? That's all. Yeah, that's it.
And I think that's a cultural thing too, from the top. That has to come from the top. If you've experienced, I've experienced it. Anyone in this county can have has a story of engaging with county government and not having someone that seems like they care. That push comes from the top, and expectation from county workers and folks recognizing that they serve the people of Baltimore County first.
I can honestly say I've had a rocky road with various things that I've needed to get done with Baltimore County government.
Right.
I can honestly say that. As somebody who's voted here, got a diploma on the wall and lives here. That it, and I know Johnny O. I knew Don Mueller. I know Gibson. I know all the councilmen. I have an issue right now that I can't get solved. Right, literally.
And
I don't know, and I've quit on it. I've just sort of like, all right, I'm throwing my hands up.
Sure.
If I can't get help, yelling on the radio about it.
Which hearing from the public, sometimes it gets to the point, just like you said, where it almost seems like a strategy to keep it hard, to not, even if they have the answer, even when we've gotten involved, like, they've told me the answer. I'm like, why don't you just tell them? Like, what are you telling me for, because I've gotten involved with it? Was it that hard to kind of explain it or engage with somebody who's reached out to the office? What did it take me or even one of my colleagues to get involved to try and solve this issue where clearly we were capable of solving it, but we made it as hard as possible and as frustrating as possible? Let me also be clear. I don't expect a perfect world. Like, if the expectation is of folks that engage with the public that have a certain standard of engagement, I can't – if you have it, I think the other piece that's missing is that folks feel that when they have a bad experience or they can't get something done, they have no other recourse, so they do throw their hands up at it. And I want to change that as well and be making it possible for when there's an issue and you have a suggestion to make county government more accessible, more accountable, and better, that you have an ear in the county to make sure that that's an opportunity to do.
Just want to see an effort. That's
absolutely
all. Return the email. That's all. Return the call.
Right.
Councilman Pat Young, he tries to return. Where's your office? Your office?
Actually, we're looking at it right now, right by the fire station.
I thought it was right across the street here. I know Kwesi's office used to be over here too, right?
They still have a satellite office. They rotate staff through throughout the week, yeah. So.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on, man.
No,
thanks for yelling at me down at the beach and Armory.
I'm happy to.
Find a thing on the Armory. Let's do that.
Right. No. Well, yeah. So we're working for the, which is great.
Now, the cannabis thing was coming in, right?
So the I don't want to go through the whole, I can go through the whole thing with you. We knew that the Armory was going to be surplused when I was still in the legislature, and there were still soldiers there with the MP unit that were rotating through. The big question even then was, this is five years ago, what's going to happen to the building? And they're like, oh, it's going to be surplused, and then in the surplus process, it's offered to state agencies, it's offered to local government, and if they say no, then it goes to the clearinghouse list where a private bidder can purchase it. So it had been toured through by UMBC and a few state agencies. They said no. It was toured through by local government, Rec and Parks, the police department, fire department, for potential use, and we had said no. And I heard about this sort of late in the process saying, why did we say no? Like, it seems like a perfect opportunity to have, like, a public use right here in the
location.
Location, too. And right. This area had lost a community center back when the elementary school took over and was rebuilt, Catonsville Elementary School. But they said because the price tag to not only purchase it but also to renovate it to government standards and public standards was too high. And then it went down a rabbit hole trying to find out, well, what was the number? Because everybody kept saying it was too much, but nobody was giving me a number. Eventually came up with $11.5 million for purchase and for renovations because of asbestos, lead, mold. Since the building had been closed, multiple floods had happened in the basement. When the unit was there, they would also talk about floods that were happening there, but they were there to kind of bail out and do what they had to do. So it'd been sitting there deteriorating, and the price tag just kept getting worse. At that point, trying to get the state and county to kind of talk to each other fell through, and it sounded like they were just going to move towards putting it on the surplus list. Then we had obtained $250,000 from the state during the 3 years ago during the budget process, specifically for the county to evaluate the building, because even the 11.5 was anecdotal. It was based on experience, size, issue.
That means somebody's really going to pay for that.
Or
is anywhere near worth that much.
Yep, and you could make the argument that it might be a lot more or it might be a lot less, but nobody did an actual evaluation. So we got money for the county to do so, but in that scenario, it only would happen if nobody purchased the building. In between that, we got the money, and then we had the state had come up with their idea that they wanted to turn it into an incubator. This is where the problem started, because there were 36 locations that were reviewed for potential incubator space, which was required by the updated campus law, but this wasn't one of them. This wasn't one that was reviewed in terms of the original, like, looking at a space. I really do believe that they thought that they had, a state building. It was recently surplused. We're going to be able to walk in with minimal renovations and just put in this incubator space. And when they came to me, they were pretty much saying what they were doing. And I asked, like, are you asking my permission or are you telling me what you're doing? And they're like, well, this is what the plan is. I'm like, okay, well, how are you going to manage all of these things? And they're like, oh, we don't think it's going to cost nearly as much. I'm like, have you been in it? And the folks I had been talking to from the campus administration hadn't been in there. So I was like, honestly, from what they told me, I didn't think it was going to happen, because they knew so little about the building and also the neighborhood. I said, well, if you really want to do this, you need to meet with the neighborhood yesterday and the community, especially the business community, you know, as soon as possible. And then they asked if I'd hold a meeting. I was like, well, it's not my building. It's yours. So I would start with the Chamber of Commerce and go from there and take suggestion, because they're actively in this community.
Otherwise, they're going to fight you.
Right. So,
like, literally, right? You know,
And that was the hope, to try and prevent that by throw an idea out. Like,
right.
Engage with them about, it's your property, this is what you'd like to do with it, and see what gets back. And what they ended up doing was engaging with the Chamber of Commerce, who then tried to have a meeting with their business members, which made it look like they were trying to have a private meeting, which then all of a sudden they sent it out to everyone, which made it seem like they were doing something below board or secretively, which they didn't intend to, but that was the narrative that started. And then they had a meeting and honestly got their asses handed to them in terms of, like, what are you thinking? It's by a school and all these things, which they acknowledged afterwards, were like, I think we got a lot of education work to do. Like, yeah, I think you do. And this was right before the legislative session, with the expectation, they told me and they told the state legislators, that they were going to have multiple meetings before anything happened there. And then through the budget process, us getting called, saying, hey, they're trying to get money for a incubator project, but the only one that they were working towards was the armory. So that indicated to me, like, well, they're getting money, but they haven't had their public meetings yet. And then they wouldn't commit to when they were having them, said sometime after the legislative session. I'm like, all right, well, working with our state partners, Senator Sidnor, Lethe McCaskill, and Delegate Ruth, we got money in the budget to restrict funds until they had those public meetings. So we kind of left the session feeling like, okay, we've got their feet held to the fire, requiring a report on the public meeting and public inputs related to what they want to do next.
This is just due diligence.
Then between then, in the capital budget for the money they got to renovate the building, it said construction to start July 2025 and to end July 2026, which the Sun reported on in July, or like right before July. Threw me off. I didn't even know it said that in either, because to a budget person who was on appropriations for 8 years, that's a fiscal year. They needed to say something that they were active, but I knew they weren't going to start anything, because they hadn't had bids out. There was no plan. Nobody knew what it looked like. You couldn't even can't break ground with a state project if you don't know what the building's going to look like or hadn't been approved. So we knew nothing was going to happen July 1st. but the article made it seem like it was, which then made everyone feel like they were lied to by the state, which then caused even more concern and distrust of what happened.
Yeah.
So thanks to the governor and listening to the community and listening to his professionals and the folks like us on the ground, just letting him know it seemed to be like executed inappropriately or at least not engaged with enough to then have any kind of input. He decided to kank the project here. They have to build an incubator somewhere else. And then after that point, the state was out of it. They still own it, and they have to move through their surplus process. At that point, we needed to have a meeting because there was no longer a plan. Didn't necessarily agree with the plan, but they had a plan they were moving forward with, and the state owned the building. It wasn't local. But now it didn't matter. At this point, we needed to inform folks of what was happening. So we had two and a half months ago, we had a public input meeting at the library, well attended, filled the basement space, caught everyone up. And like most things, and this is also part of the reason for running, I think some people showed up to the meeting expecting everyone to be as mad as they were. But the majority of folks showed up because they just want to know what was going on. They just want to know what was going on. They had seen things and read things, and some things didn't sound right. They wanted us and someone in authority to tell them what had happened. And we did that. And obviously there was disappointment from how long it took to get that information, but everyone left the meeting, and me included, hopeful of what happened next, that we were now including everyone, committed to another meeting, didn't know what would be reported on the next meeting that we had just, I think, 2 weeks ago. But in between then, this group had stood up of regular folks that showed up to the first meeting that were just concerned about the armory. They had had a meeting they invited me to and some of the elected officials about just what could happen next that led to calming the state down. Not calming anybody down, but having them talk to each other, because at that point it had just been through letters and social media thing, intermediary. So then finally getting the county executive and the governor's folks to talk directly about what was going on, that there was public interest in this and how could we move it forward and work as a partner to figure out what happens next. So at this point, as stated at the last meeting, it's not a done deal because the county had backed off of their position of never taking it to potentially taking it as a pass-through to another organization that we've identified through Southwest Visions who has experience with these kinds of things. We're just, at this point, engaging with them to make sure that the liability piece, they don't want to do that if the organization can't handle it. So right now we're just
doing... Well, it's a big important space
absolutely,
for the community, right?
Right. Yeah, so. And they can go through this process of public input, visioning, what it could be, what it can't be, or what it shouldn't be, but based off of input that they've gotten through public interest meetings that they've conducted previously with other projects.
Well, I hope this gets done quicker than, like, let's say the Inner Harbor has or Harbor Park.
I think that'd be a good standard, Nestor.
Let's all get together and figure this thing out.
And the good thing is we're all working together now, which we weren't before.
Councilman Pat Young is here. He is working together with me at the Beaumont to get this show over with. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery. I have Raven Scratch-Offs. Stu and his buddies up here don't know that, but I'm going to give them some Raven Scratch-Offs here. Hope we get a lucky batch here. Right. It has been good visiting with you, man. I love Catonsville. You know that.
Yeah,
you know,
thanks so much.
My
for
wife
coming.
Thinks I screwed the pooch on not getting the lamb chops, but I love the lobster tail. But I'm telling you, the secret weapon here in Catonsville is the chicken tortilla soup up at El Guapo.
Get delicious.
The chicken tortilla soup at El Guapo. That's all I'm telling you. A little bit of avocado in there, and a little bit of that sour cream in there, and the tortillas.
Right,
it's perfect for me.
Good
Thanks
stuff.
For coming out, man. I appreciate it, and good luck to
Nestor,
you.
Nestor, great to see you.
From the running for county executive, give everybody the timeline, because everybody
yeah,
knows
right, no.
primary and all that stuff. Right.
So primary is June 2026, and the general election will be in November, so we're roughly 9 months out from the primary.
Getting there.
Right, yeah. Yes, sir.
It's either it's kind of like with construction or construction season with roads. It's either election season or it's election season, right?
Right, right. And even being out now, folks are all like, it's that far out? Like, there's not a lot of time. It's going to fly by. And we're dedicated to meeting as many people as we can.
Well, I like to get out in the front of it just to learn the issues. I mean,
Listen,
I mean, I've spent an hour with you, an hour with Izzy, an hour with Julian, an hour with David Marks, who isn't running.
Mm-hmm.
I spent an hour with Nick, who is. All of you talk about the same, like the aging population and infrastructure in the same areas and town centers. And It's important to remedy. To your point, I don't hear anybody else talking about this stuff.
That's true.
So, yeah. I mean, I do appreciate you coming out.
Thanks
again. And without you, I don't get the wisdom and the expertise. So, Councilman Pat Young, thanks for your service as well, as always. I know we talked about that as well. Life is great out here in the 21228. Luke is out in Owings Mills, also a Baltimore County outpost. We haven't talked about another mall location, Owings Mills, as well as Hunt Valley Towns. We're a big county. I don't know what to say. Pat wants to run it. You can vote for him. You can get all his information and find it out. Great councilman out here in the southwest side of town.
Thanks.
Love having the electives on. Yeah, yes, man. I like having the elected officials on. We're doing sports. We're getting ready for football. Luke's out in Owings Mills. If you want breaking news, it happens first on the WNST Tech Service. It's all brought to you by our friends at Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy. Also want to thank our friends at GBMC for sponsoring us and getting me 56. I'm getting my first colonoscopy next month. So don't tell
okay.
I had to schedule this. I've been telling people to get it for 30 years, and I haven't gotten it. So now I got it.
Well, now you put your money where your mouth is, right?
Social media. There will not be pictures, I promise. It's not going to be crazy. But
getting the word out.
Fingers crossed. You know, I hear polyps and all of that. I don't want to hear about any of that. I just want to hear about – all I want to do is get ready for a nice little Super Bowl run for the Ravens. That's what I'm doing here. All right, back more. We're in Catonsville. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking. Baltimore positive.